Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome you to today's show, The American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of this show in particular and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, which brings you tennis shows each and every week, trying to give you information about any kind of tennis that's out there. Monday we have Lisa Stone. She does the Parenting Aces show. On a Wednesday we have Chuck Creasy that does the American Tennis. Then on Saturday we have Infinite Tennis with Bill Patton and also Minorities in Tennis with Alex Chan. We hope that you don't necessarily listen to all of our shows live. I want to remind you that they're podcasted on the Blog Talk Radio Network and also iTunes. Within 5 minutes of the end of our shows, they go automatically to iTunes. And, of course, during the course of your week, we would hope that you would listen to them all. It is a unique format that allows you to listen to the shows when you want to listen to them. And we offer a live experience, which is what's happening right now, and then also a podcast experience, which happens, like I said, within 5 minutes of the end of the show. It's an exciting time for college tennis, particularly on the small college side. A lot of my small college friends are out there participating or getting ready for their regional championships, which is a big highlight of the fall. They'll crown both singles and doubles winners at several regional championships, all with the hope that they will get to travel to the national ITA, USTA small college championships, which is just a great event. It's an event that brings four divisions together, Division II, Division III, NAI, and JUCO. These four divisions are looking for one champion in each division, in both singles and doubles, on the male and the female side. And then they bring them together at the end of that tournament to what is known as the Super Bowl, and they let the four winners play a semifinal and a final. And then the overall winner of those in singles, men's and women's, and doubles, men's and women's, will get a chance to travel to the Division I fall championships, the indoor championships, which is held at the Billie Jean King Tennis Center. And it's quite an event. You got to understand that there are 64 players, about 64 players that play in those events, and just bring forth a great atmosphere of college tennis, getting all those divisions in one place. I'm a big fan of the interdivisional play. I think that it helps support and promote college tennis in so many ways. In the small college world, just to be able to say that you get to play the big colleges helps with recruiting and getting fans out to the courts or having fans travel with you. And then on the big college level, it gives them a chance to play some lower lineup players that wouldn't normally get to play. And so I highly recommend it to all the Division I coaches that are out there and help support that small college tennis. We had some interesting news that came out over the weekend, and it's been going on for a while, but the Zoo Tennis, this website covered it real well, and there was a little bit of tweak in the formats. And we've been talking about this for a while. If you remember, we came across some news that showed that the ITA was thinking about changing the format. It looks like they're going to move ahead on an experimental basis. And, personally, not quite sure why you need to experiment with college tennis all that much. I had one of my friends on Facebook post some interesting thoughts, and I'll share that with you in a little bit. But in the formats, what's going to happen is that they'll play singles first. Single matches will come first. Numbers 1 through 6 will be played at the start of each team dual match. They'll be best of 3 sets worth 1 point each. 4 points are required to win. Doubles. In the case of a 3-3 tie after the singles result, then 3 doubles matches will be played using a 10-point super tiebreaker to decide the outcome. This would create college tennis's version of overtime. The team that wins at least 2 of the 3 doubles matches receives the decisive point. And in the clinch format, once 4 points have been reached, clinching the match, the remaining matches shall not be completed. Team warm-up players will not be expected to warm up with, they will be expected to warm up with their own team prior to the scheduled match time, and will not warm up against their opponent before the first points played. So we're going to talk to Coach Smith and see what he thinks about that new format. And I understand it's an experimental format, and just to get his viewpoint on this. So there's a lot of interesting things that are going in here, and I'm curious, kind of what the overall feeling is towards this. Doubles is such an exciting point of the dual match, and I'd hate to see it lessened any more than what it has been. We've had a great doubles team, the Bryan brothers. I'm not sure how many dual matches they would have got to play doubles in. I think that I saw a statistic that they may have got to finish one doubles match in one of their seasons if this format had been used. So that'd be a shame to lose some great doubles players for the U.S. And college at tennis. So we'll see what happens with that. But the ITA, the USTA, they've been working together in some areas here to help college tennis, and we love to see the growth that's brought forth from these, and we hope that at least some of this continues. So I think we've got Coach Smith here on the line. I want to remind you that the call-in number today is 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Let's see if we can bring Coach Smith in here.
I'm here.
Hi, Coach Smith. Good to talk to you today.
Hi.
I want to welcome you to the show.
You got it. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Well, on this show we talk about college tennis, and we give a chance for our interviewees to give us a quick bio of themselves first, because, Coach, there are going to be some people that listen to the show, and for me it's hard to believe that they're not going to know who Peter Smith is and where he's at and how he got there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure there's quite a few, but for me, yeah, I have kind of an interesting story, because I grew up in Connecticut and moved to San Diego when I was 14, so I kind of grew up playing tons of sports in Connecticut. And once I moved to San Diego, I moved to La Costa, where Pancho Segura and Bobby Riggs were, and everyone else that goes along with that. So then I really focused on tennis, and then went to Long Beach State and signed for $500, which was at that time books and tuition. That makes you feel old right there when you say books and tuition was $500. And, was a decent college player, played one there, and then played a little bit afterwards. It was like 360, and Dad told me to finish my education, and I did, and went back to finish my degree, and was probably going to keep on playing. And then they offered me the head coaching job. So that was, 27 years ago, 26 years ago. And I coached there, and they dropped the program after 4 years. You know, the first step in dropping the program was hiring a 22-year-old kid to run it. So, but then coached at Fresno State, coached at Pepperdine, and now this is my 12th year here at USC. So, I've had some success at every school and been very fortunate, to have great kids on my team and great people around the program to really help with the success.
Coach, you've been associated with quite a few or a few good programs and climbed the ladder, so to speak. I didn't know that at 22 you were hired, and 4 years later Long Beach cut the program. That wasn't because of you, I hope.
Well, we were pretty good. I mean, you know, I've used the term they hired me to fire me. You know, I think at the time they pretty much knew. Look, when I was on the team, we were, you know, perennial top 20 team. The 1 year I was playing had their best year ever. They were the number two seeds at the NCAA tournament. And then they hired me, Larry Easley, quit to get into the magazine business full time. And they hired me. And then the first thing they did was take away all my scholarships. So it was definitely the first step in de-emphasizing the program was hiring me. And we were good. We had one scholarship, and our high ranking was 19 in the country. So, I mean, obviously that wouldn't happen in today's world. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you can always be better. But we had enough success to not get rid of the program.
Coach, as I said, you climb the ladder there. You play now. And how many teams are in the PAC conference now?
Well, it's the Pac-12, but there's on the women's side, there's 11 teams. On the men's side, there's 8 teams. So four of the Pac-12 schools don't offer men's tennis, which
okay.
is a shame.
I personally think it's the hardest conference in the U.S., particularly on the men's side. I'm not going to take anything on the women. It's tough there, too. But was that part of the reason that you moved from Pepperdine to USC?
Yeah, I had some frustrations at Pepperdine. But, you know, they called, USC was very aggressive. They called me up and just offered me the job. And, you know, I was actually, wasn't even here. We're at the NCAA tournament. And I came back and walked the campus. And really, USC was such a beautiful campus. I had no idea how beautiful the campus was. You know, I had never done that. You know, whenever we played SC, we just went to the courts. And, you know, walking the campus is so beautiful. I remember my assistant, Todd Dobler, looked at me about halfway through our campus walk, and he said, "You're an idiot if you don't take this job." And, you know, I haven't looked back, and, you know, it's obviously the best decision I've made in my coaching career.
Coach, let's talk about USC just for a second. How many students are there at USC?
There's about 17,000 undergrad, about 28,000 including graduate students. So, you know, it's a really nice size university, not too small, not too big.
Now, if you're looking to come to USC, I mean, what majors would entice you to come to the school?
Well, I think we're most known for our business department. We have one of the best undergraduate business departments. We have the best undergrad business department in the West and one of the best in the country. I believe we're 5. We have a lot of majors, but, you know, most of the tennis players are either going to be like a kinesiology, human performance major or econ or business major. A lot of tennis players historically have been business majors.
Yes, sir. Your tennis program itself, is it a fully funded program? Do you have the 4.5 full scholarships?
Yeah. I mean, look, any team in the Pac-12 is going to be fully funded, and, you know, they take care of us very well. I mean, our tennis team, we've had success, and, you know, they've rewarded that success. And, you know, historically, you know, USC men's tennis has won 20 men's tennis championships, which is the most of any program. You know, and they recognize that. They recognize that this is one of the top programs in the department and in the country for men's tennis. So, you know, we're taken care of, and we get what we need.
Yes, sir. Your facility, how many courts do you have?
We have 6 inside the stadium, and there's 6 more outside. But we control those 6 inside the stadium. It's really a nice, intimate setting for playing a college tennis match.
Do you have an indoor facility? Do you need one?
I mean, you know, you always, it's easy to want more, isn't it? But no, I don't think need, you do not need. I mean, Southern California, it rains maybe 14 days a year, you know, at most. So usually when it rains, everyone's a little happier. You know, we're all happy it rains. So,
as I travel through this, these Midwest coaches keep, they need an indoor facility. And I knew there wasn't a lot of rain out there in your area, but I didn't know if there were any plans.
No. I mean, I think in a perfect world we'd have one or two covered courts, but there's 4 indoor courts in all of Southern California, and those were just recently built. But there's not a lot of need for these courts. I mean, we have probably the best weather in the world here, so it's nice.
Now, how many players do you carry on your squad this year, Coach?
This year we have 9 on the roster right now, probably add one at the semester, but usually there's between 10 and 12.
And you have quite a diverse crowd over there, Americans versus international?
Yeah, definitely. We have 1, 2, 3 internationals on the team, and the rest I think are all from California. We have one boy. I'm sorry, Nick Pistol's from New York. Southern Cal has some good players. We're very fortunate for that. I like to have 1 or 2 international kids. I think 2 is a perfect number. I think 3 is good. I think 4 might be a little too much. But, I think having 1 or 2 international kids is great for the American players on the team.
Yeah. I had a chance to work for Coach Dick Gould during the summers whenever I got to go out there back in the 90s. And the thing I admired most about Coach Gould was he'd come off the court and he'd start recruiting. It'd be 6 o'clock California time, which meant it was 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock back on the East Coast there. And I always admired that about you guys out there on the West Coast. You really get a full day in before you start recruiting in the evening. Is that the case for you too?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it can be challenging because I've gotten stuck with that a lot of times. And, we have a family and, we have family dinners at 6:30. So I better make those recruiting calls quick earlier than that.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, sometimes, you're done with dinner in summertime, maybe by 8, and it's too late. So, yeah, you have to think and remember that. But, I mean, Gouldy was the best recruiter there's ever been, and so, that doesn't surprise me one bit.
Now, have you started playing your tournaments?
No, we've been practicing for a week and a half, and our first tournament will be the All-American. A couple of the guys have played the Futures out here, but mostly this time, really September for me is training and, just trying to get the freshmen going and, get the returners games back. And, we really believe in development and working on the guys' games. So we spend a lot of time one-on-one with them on the court. So, most of that is just training right now.
Well, with the 25 dates that the NCAA Division I gives you, do you spend a lot of time in the fall at tournaments or do you put them in a dual match?
Most of the guys play 4 tournaments. October is, we'll play 4 tournaments, probably 3 in October and 1 in November. Playing a tournament, playing a match, that's an extension of practice. And that's how I look at it, that, they're one and the same. And you got to take what you're working on in practice and work on it in matches. And, that's the only way to get better.
Now, is USC on the semester schedule, or are they on a quarter schedule?
Yeah, we're semester.
Okay. All right. Do you have any highlights for the fall outside of the All-American?
I mean, we're playing a really cool tournament in Orlando at Disney World that Florida State's putting on. A few schools are playing it. It's our play, and it's ESPN has a facility there, and it's part of Disney World, and it's going to be put on ESPN3, the finals. So that's good. That's good for college tennis, and that's fun for the guys to get a little taste of play, and also, you know, go to Disney World, see that part of the country.
Yeah, we had Coach Chris Young. He's the women's coach at Oklahoma State last week, and he was traveling down to that tournament as well, a clay court tournament, and that's a little unusual for Division I's recently, isn't it?
Yeah, just, you know, it's, you know, for a couple of the international guys, you know, obviously play is a little bit more familiar, but look, just doing something a little different sometimes is fun. And Southwest flies right into Orlando, so, you know, it's not too expensive, and it'd just be a good weekend for the guys.
Right. Now you finish up the fall and come back in January. Do you bring your guys in early for the before school gets started, Coach?
Not too early. I mean, we start school, I think, January 10th, so we come in a couple days early. But, you know, they've got to stay in shape over the break. But we get going right away the first weekend. We have a tournament at beautiful country club, Sherwood Country Club, up in Thousand Oaks. It's real nice. So, yeah.
And I'm curious, as you travel through your spring semester and your dual matches, being, you know, and I mean the greatest respect for what you do there at USC, being one of the top programs in the country, what are your highlights on your spring schedule?
Hopefully the highlight is we just get better. but, you know, I do a couple different deals that I really like. You know, each spring break we get out of Dodge and we go someplace. I decided 3 or 4 years ago that I was just going to go someplace on spring break I'd never been. And so I've been enjoying that the last 4 or 5 years, just to take guys and put them in an environment that's a little different. And, you know, California, sometimes the toughest thing about California is it's just a little too easy. And so this year we're going to Alabama, where my old assistant, George Husak, is the coach, and we're going to Ole Miss. So not two places that Pac-12 teams are used to going to, but to me it's about the experience and putting them in an environment that, you know, pushes them. The only way you get better is adversity, and sometimes you have to create that adversity to grow. And so going there, spring break, it's a great time. The guys don't have to worry about studying on the road. And we go, and, you know, hopefully we get some fans to yell at us and push us. And, you know, hopefully we win. But if we lose, we can learn from that also.
Now, does the Pac-12, is it to have a regular season champion and then a conference team championship?
Yeah. Yes, that's something we just started. We've had the conference team champion just for 2 years. That's something I was really behind and really pushing. We used to have an individual champion at the end of the year. But, yeah, we have a regular team championship. So we play everyone in our conference once. And then we have a what they call a double bye tournament, where, you know, you get straight into the semis if you're the one or two team in the regular season. But, you know, it you get rewarded for a good regular season, and then you have we played up in Ojai, which is a great, it's the oldest amateur tournament in the world. No, I'm sorry. The oldest amateur tournament in the U.S. It's over 100 years old. I don't believe it's 120 years old. It's very old. And so it's real honor to be a part of that tournament. For those on the West Coast, everyone knows about Ojai. Very famous, a high school, a bunch of different divisions, junior college, and it's just a real gathering of tennis. And they play it at this beautiful Libby Park, and it's just a beautiful setting.
Coach, I was going to ask, in interdivisional play, is it in the course of the year, do you play other divisions? How does that work for you being there at USC?
I can't remember the last time we've played another team besides a Division I team. But we do some doubleheaders. We do different things. We're playing playing UC Davis this year. So it's maybe a little different. They're just starting their program. They're doing a good job. So just try and do different things. And really, I always try and play the people in California. I don't, it's hard to get on my schedule if you're not in California or you're not one of the better teams. So I don't want to run away from the local competition.
Now, recruiting-wise, for me, I just can't imagine. I suspect that the top kids in the U.S., they want to come to at least the Pac-12. Why not come to USC? Were you out at the U.S. Open recently?
Yeah. It's tough now. You know, each year I try to pick and choose a little bit. This year I watched. I can't stay out there for 2 weeks. It's tough because that's the first week of school. So I went out for the first week of the main draw of the pro tournament. And, you know, I want to go out there and watch my former players. I had 3 former players in the main draw. So that's a real joy to connect with them, watch them play. That's really great. So we weren't at the junior tournament this year. Recruiting's recruiting. You know, I think there's a select schools that maybe get the first shot, and, you know, thankfully we're kind of one of those. But, you know, still, you know, Duke, Virginia, Stanford, UCLA, Texas, Georgia, you know, there's some pretty good coaches, pretty good schools out there. So, you know, hopefully we're in the conversation with the better kids. But, you know, in the end, you know, those kids have some great choices.
Coach, who did you watch at the Open for those people, the former USC players?
I watched Steve Johnson, who, of course, was our big stud a couple of years ago, and Robert Farah, who was a stud before Stevie. And then I coached Robert Lindstedt at Fresno and Pepperdine. And so he's done really well in doubles. He was as high as he's actually lost in the finals at Wimbledon the last 3 years in doubles. So, you know, it's just great to see those guys playing in that environment and connecting with them.
Yeah, Coach Stevie Johnson, what a great college tennis player. When you recruited that guy, did you think you'd do what he did?
No. No, I mean, there's no way anyone could have predicted what he would have done. I mean, he was amazing and remarkable and so many things. And, you know, I will say that I remember saying after the first month that he was going to be the best player I ever coached. But I'm usually pretty optimistic about all my guys. But to say he's going to win 72 matches in a row, help us win 14 championships and win 2 individual championships. No, that's not going to make those predictions.
Sometimes called the greatest college tennis player ever. How do you feel about that, Coach?
Well, he certainly has the best record. What is the greatest player? You know, is it what he does in college, what he's done after college? You know, he certainly had the best career. He's a 7-time All-American. That's been done before, but nobody's ever won 72 matches in a row. So, you know, and 14 NCAA championships. Great to be a part of it. And, you know, Stevie's such a special person, such a special, you know, person in my life. It's great, you know, it's great to now be friends with him and have the relationship we have. So I feel very fortunate.
Coach, I don't know how you would beat, like you said, I mean, if you go with just college tennis itself, I don't know how you could do much better than what that young man did for you and that team.
He's a great guy. He's a great guy. We toast him most nights at the penthouse.
I mean, you can only win 4 championships, and if somebody can go 73 matches in a row, I guess we'll shake that person's hand. But it was just amazing. Go ahead.
No, if somebody wins 73, I hope I'm there to watch it. That would be quite an accomplishment. But, yeah, I mean, how Stevie was as a person and how he was as a team member are just as important, you know, to how successful he was.
Was he a leader for your team, like a team captain, Coach?
He was a stud, man, on and off the court. He got it done. He, you know, when you're winning that much, you have a lot of confidence, and, you know, he has a certain presence, and, you know, we've had success here at SC because, you know, the players, when we've had our best teams, the players have shared my philosophies. And, you know, sometimes that's different in tennis. Sometimes, you know, tennis is a very independent, selfish sport. And, you know, sometimes you get individuals that have their own ideas and want to do things, you know, their own way. And that's fine. But it's not going to work in a team environment to have different kind of views than the coach. And, you know, it's not saying they're wrong views, but, you know, there's got to be one leader and what, you know. And so Stevie and I, you know, we're very similar. And so were a couple other guys before him that helped us with the success.
Well, Coach, in my experience, I often find that the tennis players really embraced that's a team atmosphere because, I mean, they were taught, you know, it's an individual sport. You need to look out for yourself. And then all of a sudden college tennis came along and gave them a little different outlook going to battle for your friend who was on the next court beside you. You know, at the top schools there, is that the same case? Does the team move along more rapidly than the individuals?
Well, I would say 98% of the kids you get, you know, thrive in the team environment a little bit. And really for every junior, you know, that's what they're striving for. I mean, if you go back to junior tennis, and I have three boys that play junior tennis, really I think everyone's defining moment in junior tennis is probably being part of 12 zonals. I know for a lot of my players that will always say, oh, 12 zonals in Tucson, Arizona was the best. You know, so when you're doing that, you're young and you're very idealistic, that's awesome. And I think, you know, that's what every junior player should be shooting for, is to be a part of a great team and you know, to have 10 to 12 built-in friends and to go through training and practice together is really awesome and bonding. And I think all those kids love that.
Now, pro tennis is obviously something that your recruits are looking at. Is that often talked about during practice, matches? How do you work that in?
No, you don't talk about that stuff. I mean, we don't talk about winning. You know, you talk about getting better. You know, winning takes care of itself, just like being a great pro takes care of itself. You know, you don't worry, you know, certainly the end is there. You want to win the NCAAs. You want to be successful. You want to be a good pro. I mean, there's not a player on my team that doesn't want to be a good pro. But, you know, that's not something you talk about. You got to worry about all the little steps to get to that destination. And so worrying about the end result is counterproductive. And, you know, you got to go out, get better.
Well, we're finding that on the men's tour in particular, that as you age, there's still a great chance that, you know, you can play some pro tennis, which really helps college tennis out. Do you think more international and American kids are considering the pro tennis route for the 4 years of good play?
Yeah, I do think a lot of the, you know, I think it's pretty well known that, you know, the average age in top 100 is over 27. So when you go to be turn pro and you go to really play the pro tour, you better be a man. And, you know, it's not fun to be out in the futures and getting beat up, you know, month after month. That's not a great way to grow up, in my opinion. And being a part of a university where you're learning, you're improving your mind, you're around other kids, you know, boys and girls, and you're growing up naturally. I mean, that's a good thing. I really think the reason a lot of our kids don't make it is they're a little too sheltered, and, you know, being out in the society, the population, having to do homework at night, that's a good thing. That creates a lot of good habits and also creates a lot of good things when you're done with tennis, you know.
Well, the pro tennis world, you really have to be, you know, and I mean it in the best respect, they're comfortable with losing because that's what's going to happen. In college tennis, that's not necessarily the case. You can really build some momentum, some confidence, and get some good practice in. And I think that plays into the decision sometimes.
It should be. You know, I think sometimes agents involved and, you know, the picture gets a little muddled. You know, kids should be wanting to grow up, and, you know, the programs, certainly that we compete against, they all have great programs, great strength coaches, nutritionists, you know, mental coaches. I mean, there are so many resources at a school like USC. It's beyond belief. And, you know, being a part of a team is a good thing. That really helps in your maturity.
Coach, in your years of experience in college tennis, and you mentioned strength training, diet, other things, what's been one of the biggest influencers over that time period that's really helped these kids reach a higher level?
Parents. The two most important people in a tennis player's life are his mother and father. And so, you know, that's really important. I see the kids that come from the good families, you know, that makes a difference. And, you know, so, you know, you see if there's some issues at home and that translates. But, you know, look, you can always get a better diet. You can always get stronger, you know, and, you know, people who love tennis and, you know, have a good, you know, background are ready to really improve as they get older. You know, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 are the years you're really going to take off in tennis.
Coach, you're one of the fortunate schools in America that could probably go with all American players if you choose to do so. As you look out across the college landscape, and you look at this American versus international perspective, do you think we have too many internationals in college tennis?
Not really, no, I don't. What's our purpose here? Like I said, I mean, this is America, and, you know, I do believe in choice, and, you know, some schools have more foreigners than the others, and some have all Americans, and that's good, and I think the schools that can recruit the top Americans have a lot of Americans. And, you know, it's pretty hard to compete for some of the other schools with the best, you know, kind of the tier one schools. That can be challenging. So, you know, we have more, you know, look, what people don't understand is we've been trying to battle this for as long as I've been a coach, you know, 25, 26 years, we've been passing rules to give American kids a better shot at playing college tennis. Out of all the sports, we've been the most proactive, and, you know, it's made a difference, and I think we've gotten it a lot closer to being right the last 5 years. You know, we've got the older internationals out. That was not great. And, you know, I think the competition is great. To have a couple of international kids on my team is absolutely wonderful for the Americans. It's really, really good, you know, for the American kids to meet someone from Holland or, you know, Eastern Europe or South America. That's great for them.
It does bring forth a great exchange of ideals. I found the internationals didn't really understand that team concept, but they understood how to work hard on the tennis court, and maybe some of the Americans didn't know what that meant and picked up a little bit from the internationals, whereas the Americans kind of showed the internationals what it meant to study inside the classroom and what it took there.
Well, a lot of the American kids take all of this for granted. You know, that's life. I mean, you know, we have it pretty well here. We have a lot of good things, and so when the internationals come over, they are astounded at the resources we have, just absolutely blown away. So, you know, and they share that with the American kids, and it'll open their eyes a little bit. But, you know, a lot of the, you know, certain countries are absolutely wonderful athletes. You know, they play a lot of team sports in Europe, and, you know, so, yeah, it's hard to say. You know, but the international, most of the international kids that are coming to America are very open-minded. You know, I always say, look at it if it was reversed. If this system only existed in Europe, which American kids would be going to Europe?
Yeah.
Only the most open, independent ones. And so we usually get, you know, kind of the best from Europe.
That's an interesting perspective, Coach. I mean, do you think a lot of Americans would be going to Europe?
Not many. So which ones would be going? You know, certainly there'd be a lot of kids turning pro, a lot more kids turning pro, but just think about it, if we didn't have this system, it's an amazing way to look at it, to flip it. So,
yeah.
You know.
Well, as you look at the minorities in tennis, and we believe that they're the groups of people that are going to offer some of the greatest chances for tennis to grow. As you go about recruiting, as you see other college tennis teams, Coach, are the minorities contributing to American tennis?
Like, I still think tennis is too expensive, and you know, I think what's happened in the last 10 years, and I think a lot of that has been done with the tournament schedule. You know, traveling all over the country has promoted academies. And academies are expensive. And I think it's very hard to be good in tennis unless you have a father or mother who played tennis, or you're not spending a lot of money on private lessons and academies. And so, you know, so that leaves out a certain segment of the population. And so, yeah, I think it's tough. I mean, you know, It can be tough, but you know they're out there, and you know the USTA has kind of made comments about trying to find them, but it's a challenge. You gotta get to kids early, and you know the parents have to take a role in tennis. There's not many teams, so you know my kids played all the sports, and in all those sports there was a team, and there was a coach, and there was a team mom, and you couldn't get to practice, someone is going to pick you up. And in tennis, it's not that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. American tennis of itself, Coach, do you like the direction that it's going with the top juniors that you see?
Look, it's my opinion that, you know, how long did it take for Marty Fish to really, really, you know, make a big impact. And, you know, I still think going to college 1 or 2 years is a good thing, is a really good thing. And I'd like to see that. I'd like to see, you know, I just think when you turn pro when you're 17 or 18, it's really hard to develop an all-around game. And, you know, you can see what Nadal's doing in tennis by taking balls early, taking time away, coming into the net some. You know, that's the brand of tennis we teach at SC, that I teach. And I still think to be able to play from every spot in the court is really important. And, you know, if you're trying to win every week, that's pretty hard to develop that when you're 17, 18 and trying to beat men.
We were fortunate to see a great generation of player with the Courier, Chang, Agassi, and the Sampras that skipped college tennis and jumped directly into the pro world. You think we'll see a cluster like that again anytime soon?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's tougher. It's going to be a lot tougher now. I mean, tennis is just tougher. It's more international. There's more countries playing. There's more access. The world is a much smaller place. You know, those guys were very successful at a young age. And, you know, I mean, that's pretty much documented that that's going to be hard. to have happen at a super young age like that. So it's possible, but probable. I don't think it's probable.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I think tennis is in kind of a tough spot in the U.S. You've seen a lot of tournaments go away, and you really got to be big. You got to be big and beautiful to survive. You know, what's surviving and thriving? Indian Wells? That's a tough place to get to for the players and the fans, but it's a destination. And so for tennis, it's got to be a destination. Cincinnati does really well, you know. Key Biscayne, Miami does really well. And, I mean, the U.S. Open, you go to the U.S. Open, and it's so big, there's such a buzz there. It's not all those tournaments. But, you know, we've lost a lot of tournaments to other countries, so that's been tough.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Just the other day, a women's tournament left the U.S. It was hard to see.
Yeah. Well, San Jose, L.A., We've lost a lot of tournaments.
Well, the question I had on my list, and I've got a few more. I have put on there, is college tennis contributing to the downfall of American tennis, or is it contributing to a positive change in direction? You can answer that, but I think I know the answer to it from the coach from USC.
Well, I don't understand how it could be the downfall. You know, I think college tennis, you know, all the budgets of college tennis, it's like $600 million. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of resources here. And people don't realize how much resources that go into college athletics and college tennis. And so that's, you know, we'd really have to be doing a terrible job for to have it lead to the downfall of college tennis. I think we're trying very hard, you know, to put out good people and good players and put out a good product.
Well, I agree, Coach.
And I think we're doing that.
I'm curious here. I used to say that a scholarship such as yours was probably a $2 million investment when you looked at it. Somebody traveling from out of state that gets to play the competition that you get to play against, that gets to travel and do the things over a four-year period that you get, that's probably saving a family, and the training and just the training facilities and, you know, all of it put together. I mean, am I close to that number? Is it $2 million?
Yeah, I think it's pretty hard to put a figure on that. You know, kid's 40 years old. You know, he goes to a school like USC or, you know, wherever, UCLA, you name it. That's a pretty big statement about their whole life. You know, school like SC, you can turn pro, come back, get your degree. You can do so many different things, and there's so many avenues that are open to you outside of tennis. So, you know, it's priceless, I think. It's priceless, and I think it's a shame sometimes when kids don't take that.
Coach, I suppose that you are aware of what happened over the weekend in regards to some of the changes that are being proposed. Can you help us walk through that just a little bit?
that's a big story. But, it was kind of advertised over the weekend. I've certainly been involved in it and in it to a certain degree for a while. And, our format has been debated. It's maybe B right behind international players, but it's been debated as long as I've been a coach. And, you know, we went through a big process, you know, a year ago trying to figure out the proper format and, you know, made some changes, and a lot of people felt like the changes weren't enough. You know, we tried no add and doubles last year, and, you know, the membership didn't like it. And so we decided to get rid of the dead doubles after the doubles point is clinched. If one team wins two, and we decided to go to 7-all tiebreaker for an 8-all match in doubles. And I myself was pretty disappointed in those changes, and you know, I voiced that opinion. But you know, the USTA and some athletic directors got involved, and whew, they shook it up. I mean, that was that's a lot bigger than getting rid of the dead doubles and playing a breaker at 7-all. That's for sure. So yeah, that was pretty. But you know, the ITA has responded. The ITA has responded, and I think we have a great format coming out. I can't wait to try it, and I think there should be some great benefits from it. And so, you know, look, college tennis has been about doubles, and we've produced doubles, and it's pretty hard to have something be timely and play singles and doubles, and that's been the problem, to try and get it around 2.5 to 3 hours. And so, you know, we've countered, and we're putting a proposal that we're going to try a lot, and hopefully it works. But we're going to play doubles to 6, play a tiebreaker at 5-all, and do the same thing in singles, play 2 out of 3 sets in singles, and play a tiebreaker at 5-all. But the thing that we're going to do that's really different is we're going to use 1-ad scoring, which I had never heard of 1-ad scoring. I guess they've used it a bit in Australia. And 1-ad means, you know, no ad is playing the 4, but 1-ad's playing the 5. Well, you could win a 4, but you get to deuce. One person gets an ad, they get back to deuce. The second deuce, they're playing a point that decides the game. So it's pretty interesting. You know, some people feel like no ad is. Hey, look, when college tennis was humming, and professional tennis was humming, college tennis was using no ad. So, a lot of people, powers to be, thought we were hurting professional tennis by playing no ad. So we went to ad, and I would say, you know, I don't see any correlation there. We have not added to the professional ranks since we went ad. So. Bit of a compromise is trying 1-ad. So I'm really excited to see how it goes. I think it will certainly shorten the matches.
Now, Coach, these are just experimental changes? Is that the way you understand it, the first couple
well,
of months?
Well, you know, look, you know, there's a portion of our tennis, college tennis world that really felt like we needed a shorter format that was more fan-friendly and TV-friendly. And so, you know, the USTA got involved, and I love that the fact that USTA is taking a bigger role in college tennis. We all welcome that. We want that. That's a good thing. But, no, so they put, you know, they didn't want to touch, you know, singles, 2 out of 3 sets, but they absolutely decimated doubles. A lot of people were upset by that. And so, you know, this is, you know, they've, you know, this group has definitely forced our hand, which I think is a great thing. I think it's a great thing because I think the majority of people felt like college tennis could be better, but we couldn't come up with the right format to make it better. So, you know, so hopefully we can try these 2 formats out this year and, you know, come up with something shorter and more exciting.
Well, you mentioned that the USTA, it was good to see the USTA involved. And, you know, I'm curious, and just as you look at it, is the USTA creating a college tennis portion to their group? And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
are they going to operate with the ITA, or are they going to operate outside the ITA? How do you see that?
Well, certainly with this decision, they started out by operating outside the ITA because they felt like, you know, we had our shot a year ago and we didn't do enough with it. So then they tried to do something with it. And so, you know, I think now they're going to work closer with the ITA, but the USTA can't run college tennis. It can't run, neither can the ITA. It can only be an advisory group. So, you know, the power, influence, and resources that the USDA has, we would welcome that, really welcome that. They're an advisory group.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah,
no,
this
no,
is just the Division I change. Is that right? Just Division I's are doing this?
Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting change, and, you know, I'd be curious how it affects you guys in the spring.
Well, we'll see. You know, I think, you know, we're going to play a lot more matches with the ITA format. But I've never been afraid of change. I don't think change is bad. I think in every sport in this country, you've seen a lot of change, and that's good. And, you know, the change we made earlier in college tennis, you know, playing doubles first, I think that helped, and I do think it's time for another change. So we'll see. I think it's great.
Coach, do you like the 25 dates that the NCAA gives you? Would you like to see it go up to 27, 28, or 30?
Of course, but I don't think that's going to change. You know, I mean, you know, I think there's bigger issues than that. You know, I mean, I think it's absolute crime that you can combine academic aid with your scholarships, but you can't combine need-based aid with your scholarships. That to me is ridiculous. I mean, I actually, you know, I think that could be a court case. That to me, I don't understand that. You know, I can understand, you know, 4.5 scholarships. I wish we had, you know, another half scholarship to give out. I don't think that will change. But, you know, to have a kid that doesn't have a lot of money and you can't use that and combine that's crazy. But you can combine a smart kid. That makes no sense to me.
I heard a story a long time ago that 4.5 scholarship was a typo error that was sent from Coach Dave Snyder when he was at the University of Texas. I think it was supposed to be 6.5, and they misinterpreted it as 4.5, and nobody ever raised a fuss after that.
No, that's an error. That's a mistake. No, that's not true. We back in the 60s, they had no scholarships, no scholarship limits. So a school like SC would have 6, 7, or 8 scholarships. I mean, there was no limit. You know, if you had a good kid, you went to your boss and I need a scholarship for him. Okay, well, all right, is he good? Okay, we'll get him. Then they put limits on it, and the initial limit that I'm aware of was 5. It might have been 6, but it was 5. And then I believe in the early 90s, the NCAA cut everybody's scholarship on the men's side, only on the men's side, 10% as a cost-saving measure. And so 10% of 5 is a half a scholarship. So that's how we got to 4.5, which is, you know, it's tough. You know, but the kids need help. It's expensive, and college education is only going up. So, you know, if we could, you know, academics is one thing. That's great. It's pretty hard to get an academic scholarship at USC. Pretty challenging. But, you know, there's a lot of need-based kids out there that you could really help.
Yeah. Well, Coach, that's about all the time we've got today. I usually ask my coaches if there's a, you know, if someone listens to the show and has a recruit or a question for you, can you give out your email address?
Sure. My email is easy to remember. It's sctennis@usc.edu. So sctennis altogether @usc.edu.
Yes, sir. Well, Coach, well, I really appreciate you coming on, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I hope you have a great practice today.
Oh, looking forward to it. On the courts in a half an hour. Going to get after it. All right, Jason, thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir. Have a great day. Thanks so much. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Peter Smith. Peter's one of the top coaches in the United States when it comes to college tennis. He coaches the USC Trojans, and they have been on the top of the tennis world, winning 4 in a row and putting forth one of the best college tennis players, if not the best college tennis player ever. And Stevie Johnson, and we're so excited to have him on, and just really blessed in a way to get the information about the format change that came about over the weekend and get to hear how it affects SC and just the rest of the college tennis world. And so it was a good afternoon, and we're looking forward to maybe in another couple of years getting Coach Smith back on and seeing how things have changed and what he's up to. Next week we've got Joey Scriviano, and he is from Baylor. The Baylor Bears, a great women's team that Joey has over there, usually a top five, top ten program, and we look forward to having him on the air. And hope you'll listen in to that episode. That'll be next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.